So much technology relies on algorithms. The question is, are algorithms fair, balanced, and predictive, or do they just compound imperfections and biases? This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with the author of Weapons of Math Destruction, and that chat starts now.
Hello, and welcome back, and thanks for listening. Coming up now is part two of my chat with mathematician and author, Dr. Kathy O'Neill. Her new book looks at big data and algorithms, and it's titled Weapons of Math Destruction, How Big Data Increases Inequality and Threatens Democracy. Dr. O'Neill was a quantitative analyst in the financial industry until she became discouraged with the inherent biases she saw within purportedly unmotivated algorithms. But algorithms are, for her, evidence of opinions being embedded in code. Algorithms can compound imperfections, including social or racial profiling. Here's the conclusion of my discussion with Dr. Kathy O'Neill. Professor, during your answer, you mentioned basically the lack of math explaining. Is that data laundering? Is that the phrase data laundering that you use in the book and in your talk?
I think there's two different things going on. So math explaining is when you try to ask clarifying questions about your score, but you're told it's too complicated for
because
you're not a math genius.
You're not going to get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Data laundering, I think, probably refers more to the fact that we, in the world of big data, and I would argue even like the point of big data, like what is big data? It's certainly not data that's big. Okay. I mean, to be clear, technology has more than caught up with the size of the collection of data we have. That's the least of our problems is finding hard disks that are big enough for our data. What data laundering probably means is the way we repurpose data. And this is sort of like the real change in the world of data is that we have figured out when we have enough data about enough people, we figured out how understanding your likes and your retweets or whatever your data exhaust in one area of the world, on social media or what have you, can be repurposed to understand you at a different level. So now we know what your politics are. We know who you're going to vote for. We know, you know, whether you're gay or straight, that kind of thing. And that's probably what I mean by data laundering.
Okay.
So it's kind of like you never intended to show this to the world, but people have inferred it about you.
I have in my notes, and I frankly don't remember writing this down, but I have in my notes, does Dr. O'Neill hate marketing?
Do I hate marketing? I have to say, sometimes, yes. I'm not going to pretend that I'm a huge fan of marketing. I'm not going to embrace the entire industry of marketing. In fact, I'm just going to go out on a limb and tell you how I feel about political ads.
All right.
I think political ads should be illegal, and I'm immediately going to change my tune. I'm like, political ads should be totally illegal, but the kinds of political ads that we are seeing created on Facebook, I think should be illegal. So what I mean by that is tailored political ads, ads that are tailored to somebody's age, to their location, to their political affiliation, to their likelihood of voting, to their likelihood of switching sides. All of those things together create a situation where politicians know more about each voter than any voter knows about a politician. And it's this asymmetry of information, and it means that politicians can absolutely manipulate voters. And moreover, they're not particularly sending information through these tailored advertising. So, for example, the Trump campaign at the end of the campaign, 2016, sent, and we only know about this because they bragged about it. Just to be clear, it's
right.
All secret.
Right.
Facebook doesn't reveal what's actually happening. They say they're going to, but I haven't seen that. They sent voter suppression ads to African Americans. These are people who they'd never expected to vote for Republicans at all. These are people they were hoping to prevent from voting for Hillary. We haven't seen those ads. For that matter, they might actually contain false information. We don't know. I think that's an extreme example, but it's not that extreme.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to ask me, do I like marketing? There's plenty of marketing that I do like. I like it when I see luxury yarn advertising because I love knitting, and I'm
uh-huh.
a huge,
right.
huge sucker for luxury yarn. But when it comes to being a citizen and being an informed citizen, I think we got to put the brakes on some kinds of ads, and that includes political ads, as I just described. It also includes predatory ads. I worked in advertising after I left finance. I worked in advertising. And the venture capitalists who would come to our company would always brag, it's a service. We're doing a service to people so that, you know, their environment on the internet, it's closer to their lives, so closer to what they care about.
Right.
Now, that is true for me when it comes to luxury yarn. But it's not true for the people that are preyed upon by predatory industries like for-profit colleges and payday lenders.
Right.
So I have an entire chapter in my book talking about just how predatory that is. And really, I should say, like, the reason I quit my job in advertising to write this book was that I realized I was contributing to it yet again. Like, just as I had realized that it was contributing to the mess that was finance, and I quit my job in finance as a quant in finance, I quit there. I didn't want to be part of the problem. I wanted to be part of the solution, right? And then the same thing happened when I was in advertising. I was like, wait a second, I'm contributing to the technology that allows for-profit colleges to not only find people that are poor enough to qualify for federal aid, because that's really what they're doing, is they're getting federal aid. They're never actually offering education.
Right.
Not only are they poor enough to qualify, but they're ignorant enough to not know the difference between for-profit colleges and private colleges. And I know this from extensive interviews with the college readiness advisors whose students were targeted by these for-profit colleges in inner cities. Mostly parents of these kids had not themselves gone to college. Many of them were immigrants. So this is preying upon them in this incredibly poignant and painful way, which is to say that these kids knew that, and their parents knew, that they had to go to college to be middle-class citizens. But they didn't know enough about the college system to make informed choices. So they were sitting ducks for these industries, and they were essentially marketing companies more than education companies. And all of their efforts and all of this millions and millions of dollars went to finding these people on the internet, and I was part of that. That's why I quit my job.
Dr. O'Neill, you have had two prior careers that are pain points that led to your third career as an author, and the author of Weapons of Math Destruction. And you have proven that algorithms are compounding imperfections that are already societal. And I guess my last question for you is kind of a teed up, how can we make it better? It just seems like it's all stacked against us at this point.
It's a great question. And I'm going to go back to our data bill of rights, because I think at the individual level, we need to know more. And as we learn more about how algorithms are judging us fairly and unfairly, we will, first of all, stop being intimidated by them, because we'll start realizing, hey, this is really, really dumb and also possibly illegal, definitely sometimes unfair. You know, the sort of starry-eyed glaze over our eyes will be removed, because we'll realize this isn't rocket science. That's number one. Number two, though, I really do think that our laws have not kept pace with the technology. And what that means, to be very precise about it, is that regulators haven't been able to enforce existing anti-discrimination laws because they simply don't know how to audit algorithms. They don't know how to decide whether an algorithm is legal or not. So we need to give regulators tools, and that's one of the things I've been trying to do, is build tools for regulators. And I'm doing that by having a company that audits algorithms, and I guess my goal is over time to turn those individual audits into some systematic process and then build tools for regulators. It's a long-term project. I don't think our laws are going to turn on a dime, especially in the next couple years. It's just not the way the wind is blowing. But I do think we have hope because, you know, we've dealt with power mechanisms before. You know, that's how we developed antitrust laws and broke up companies that were too powerful and monopolizing us. And we can do that again in the world of big tech, but we have to build the tools and we have to realize what the stakes are. So we realize what the stakes are by giving consumers and citizens the right to understand how they're being judged. And so we can start clamoring for changes. And then we build tools that regulators can actually use to enforce laws.
Dr. O'Neill, thank you so much for your time this morning. The Weapons of Math Destruction, How Big Data Increases Inequality and Threatens Democracy. And the edition that I got to review has a new afterword, which I thought was nice.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jason.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your perspective on this. I look forward to your next book. I'll talk to you
soon. Thank you, Jason.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
That was Kathy O'Neill, a former financial quant and the present author of Weapons of Mass Destruction, How Big Data Increases Inequality and Threatens Democracy. In the book, she traces the arc of a person's life from school to retirement and looks at the models that score that lifetime. Algorithms touch almost every stage of that life, of course, from scoring teachers to sorting resumes to granting loans and evaluating workers. Along the way, these opaque algorithms reinforce discrimination. It's a fascinating read, and for links to Weapons of Mass Destruction and all the sourcing we use on this show, go to KGORadio.com and look for the story that goes with this week's show. Coming up after the break, we look at 2018 through the eyes and analysis of a wealth advisor. Is that new tax law the tailwind we were promised? That's next. So please stick around. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.